A big game tests the Celtics' fantastic start to the season. And the Patriots do a little sightseeing as they practice in Colorado and prepare for their upcoming game in Mexico. It's Thursday, November 16th. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Well, big game tonight at TD Garden. The Celtics, winners of 13 consecutive games, take on the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors. These are the teams with the two best records in the NBA. Golden State comes in with a winning streak of its own, seven straight wins by 19.8 points per game on average. So the Warriors, with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, are rolling. To help me break this down, we now bring in via Skype Boston Globe Celtics beat reporter Adam Himmelsbach. Adam, what's up? Welcome to Season Ticket.
Thanks, Chris.
Obviously, this game is the game of the season so far in the NBA. When you look at this matchup, have the Celtics closed the gap at all on the Golden State Warriors?
I mean, I think you have to say they have, based on, if you're basing it on, like, since the start of the season, because no one envisioned this from the Celtics, particularly after Gordon Hayward's injury. And I think they've closed the gap with their defense. Like, nobody, I don't remember one person, myself included, who was like, hey, this team's going to have, like, an elite defense. Look at this roster. They might have the best defense in the NBA. No, the Celtics weren't even saying it. And if there's something that's going to slow down the Warriors, it's an elite defense, because they have an historically good offense.
Yeah, you're right about that. This is sort of the classic matchup. We'll see if defense can win the Celtics this game, because when you look at Golden State, they're good on defense in their own right when they want to be, particularly in the playoffs, anchored by Draymond Green. But really, as you pointed out, Adam, what makes them so historically good is that offense, the way they move the basketball, the way that they can score. They're averaging 119 points per game. Can the Celtics slow them down? And if they do it, how do they do it?
I mean, everything's in perspective. Like, I think they'll slow them down a little bit more than some other teams have. I don't see them, like, locking them up and having looking like the number one defense in the NBA. Look, like, even this Warriors team now, they've been an historic offense basically for four seasons. Their numbers right now this season are, their net rating is the best it's been. They haven't finished a season with a net rating this high in any of their three seasons, including the 73-win team, including last year's championship team with Kevin Durant. Like, the Celtics' 13-game winning streak has become the story of the NBA because it was unexpected, but it's kind of glossed over what Golden State is doing on offense right now. Like, they are running so smoothly and doing things that teams just don't do.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they're really pulling teams apart. And, you know, last year, obviously they won the championship, but it took a little while for Kevin Durant to get comfortable in his new surroundings in the Bay Area. Now they have that season under their belt. It's a little bit like Al Horford here in terms of Al's much more comfortable, and he's played better than he played last year, and he just seems to sort of have an idea of what the offense is and how to sort of impose his skills into what's happening here. Same thing with Kevin Durant, obviously at a higher level because he's Kevin Durant, but you notice that with Golden State and how smoothly they are playing. Here's the one thing when I look at the Celtics defensively, Adam, in terms of matching up with Golden State, and they did a good job in the past. I mean, the past iteration of the Celtics, the Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder Celtics, always gave the Warriors some trouble. But when I look at the Celtics now, what I notice is they can sort of play positionless basketball on defense. You have a guy like a Marcus Morris or Jason Tatum who can cover a four and then switch out onto a guard and cover a guard 25 feet from the hoop and not have it be a complete blow-by situation where the guy gets to the rim. To me, that's the difference with the Celtics this year. They just have more of those guys who can play sort of positionless defensive basketball.
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's an interesting point you make about them having success recently against the Warriors, because it's true also. Like, they've won at Golden State the last 2 years.
To Curry, Steph fakes, three for the tie. No! Jarebko tips it, out to Barnes, step back, three for the tie. No! And the Boston Celtics have stopped the record run at home of the Golden State Warriors.
If you remember the game 2 years ago when Golden State was 23-0 and they were the story of the NBA and the Celtics took them to double overtime, this is different personnel. So it'll be interesting to see how much of that's like Brad Stevens kind of having an idea of their scheme and how much of the personnel issue. Like, I think this is a game where they are going to miss a guy like Avery Bradley, as good as their defense has been, because he's just been a ball hawk and a guy who can really pester those guards up top. But with the defense now, you're right. Brad Stevens has talked about it. Steve Clifford on the Hornets talked about it the other day. They're throwing, like, sometimes five guys out there who can, like, switch on everything, and that's so valuable in today's NBA. and they might not have like the biggest guys in the world. They might not have the most athletic guys in the world, but they got this like endless supply of six foot seven wings with like big wingspans who can like get into guys' space along the perimeter, and it's causing teams problems right now.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And sort of the counter to what Golden State does, which is positionless basketball on offense. I mean, you have a guy in Draymond Green who a lot of times will play, you know, not only four for them, but play some five. He'll play some center. And Draymond can do anything. He can handle the basketball. He can shoot threes. How do you defend that? Well, you have to be positionless yourself on defense. And we've seen that so far from the Celtics. You sort of mentioned that nobody saw this coming defensively from the Celtics because you had the Gordon Hayward injury, obviously, but also just a bunch of new guys. Like, one of the things that can take a while to gel is defensive communication. So how have they been able to do this? What has Brad Stevens been able to do to get guys to be able to play as well as they've played at the defensive end, 94.5 points per game, best in the NBA? And who's the anchor of this defense?
I mean, it's a lot of things we just talked about. It's a lot of this versatility, a lot of guys being able to switch. But I think what's gotten overlooked is, like, they've hit on, like, all their offseason moves, and it's been a while since they've done that. Like, the small signings, Aaron Baines has been huge for their defense. He's like a rock in the post. Daniel Tice, I'll admit, when they said they were going to sign him last summer, I had no idea who he was. And, like, nobody had any idea who he was. He played for the Warriors summer league team the Wizards summer league team 3 years ago and wasn't, like, spectacular in summer league. And guys in summer league can usually be spectacular if they're an NBA player. And he's been fantastic. He was obviously the defensive player of the year in his league in Germany last year. And now you're seeing why. Another long guy who just kind of in addition to rebounding, like watching about Daniel is like he just keeps balls alive all the time, and things like that make a difference. So they have these other guys, Shane Larkin, who comes in as like the fourth quarter ball hawk. Brad puts him in when he doesn't like what he's seeing on the defense. He just throws him in the fourth quarter for the first time, and he like changes the flow of the game. You saw it the other night. Like he held the team scoreless for 4 minutes right after he came in, just changing the tone of the defense. They have these guys that you wouldn't expect who have just made big, big impacts in addition to everything else they're doing.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, I think Daniel Tice, you know, people joke the German Jonas Jerebko. I already like him better than Jerebko. I thought Brad sometimes would go to Jonas too much. I like what Tice brings with the energy. And I think one of the concerns, Adam, this offseason, when the Celtics made the moves they made, was that the team wouldn't have the same level of depth that they've had in the past. That was always a calling card for the Celtics. But you still see Brad playing 10 or 11 guys. And the capability to do that, again, with the new team, only four guys on the team who were on last year's team, I think that's been a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, and not only that, like, they still have an open roster spot, and they lost Gordon Hayward, so they're kind of, like, down two guys. And so everyone is playing. Like, Abdul Nader's not playing much. Gershon Yabusele is playing in spurts when they need him. But they are. They're going 10 and 11 deep, and it's guys Brad can count on. It's not like, uh-oh, I've got to throw in Daniel Tice. It's like, all right, this is a great spot for Daniel Tice. This is a great spot for Semi Ojeleye, like a second-round pick who immediately is having a huge impact on defense as well.
Yeah, so you mentioned Gordon Hayward going down. Like, I'll be honest, when Hayward went down, I sort of was looking at the Celtics and saying, all right, they're playing to be the second-best team in the East. Now, obviously, I was wrong, because you look at their record now, they have the best record in the NBA, and I think they're the best team in the East right now. We'll see what happens. I never count out a LeBron James team. Cleveland still hasn't had Isaiah Thomas there. I still think they'll get it together, even if it means that Ty Lue's not the coach when they get it together. There's too much talent there for me for them to be basically.
You think coaching change is coming, Chris?
I'll tell you, Adam, I think that when you can't change the players, right? Like, you can't change the players. If Ty Lue doesn't get that together by, like, the All-Star break, he'll lose the job the way he got it, which was, you know, they were in a situation there where they swept out, you know, the head coach on a team that was like a winning team and basically said, no, we can do better. We're not getting the max out of our guys. And so they brought in Ty Lue, because at the end of the day, if it's not getting done, what are you going to do? You're going to, you know, move Kevin Love? You're going to get rid of J.R. Smith? How many guys are you going to move? They're sort of locked into that roster. So I would think that if it doesn't happen, if they can't coalesce, then yeah, a coaching change could be in the offing.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be wild. I don't see that coming personally, but yeah, I mean, the NBA gets crazy sometimes. So
the NBA gets crazy, especially when you're dealing with LeBron James and you're dealing with, you know, high expectations there. But to swing it back to this game, I think one of the guys that has really stepped up in the absence of Gordon Hayward is Al Horford. And you wrote in the Globe today, you were sort of making light of, there are some fans that just look at the box score. And when you just look at the box score, you're probably not going to be blown away by Al Horford, although you should be blown away by the fact that in the last two games, he shot 16 of 19 from the field. But to me, Al Horford has been huge for this team. And the way he is playing right now is at an all-star level and at a level that justifies that max contract.
Yeah, he's really been excellent. And really, if you look at the box score, it is spectacular. It's just not with like 30 points, which sometimes a casual fan hears max contract and they say, oh, this guy must average 28 points a game. That's not what Al does. But his points, his rebounding, his assists, his defense, like they've been so much better with him on the court than when he's off. I had this in the paper today. I think they're outscoring teams by like 13 points per 100 possessions when he's on the court, and by about little less than one point when he's off. And that's like a huge, huge gap. And his shooting has been absolutely incredible. Look, he's not going to finish the season shooting 50% from three. But right now he's like making shots that people didn't see coming, and teams are changing the way they defend the Celtics because of it. Like if you notice, his three-point attempts are down a little bit recently, and it's because teams are like having to account for Al Horford, the three-point shooter, and that just opens things up for other players.
Yeah, absolutely. Al's one of those guys. He just makes the guys around him better. Like, you have to sort of appreciate basketball. You have to watch the games to see how he creates space. It's almost like in football, like you have a wide receiver. Wes Welker was like this. You know, you might see the catch, but you don't see how the guy got open, the subtleties of that, what he's doing, the little, really subtle points, and how smart somebody is in terms of anticipating what's going to happen and putting themselves in a position to make a play. Al does that all the time. You know, he's not Kevin Garnett. You're not going to get him out there dunking on people and screaming and being emotional. He's a different type of personality and a different type of game. But you look up at the end of the game, if you watch Al Horford, and you can see why his teammates love playing with him, because he just has such a great feel for how to play the game on both ends of the court and how to help his teammates, you know, get the most out of their ability. And you can see why a guy like Brad Stevens would love having Al Horford on his team. Other guys I'm sure Brad Stevens loves having on his team, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Adam, when you look at those guys, those are the guys that had the most pressure on them after Gordon Hayward got hurt. Tatum has come into this league, to me, fully formed offensively, which you don't see a lot of times. I mean, his offensive game, he looks like a 6 or 7 year veteran. He just knows how to score the basketball. And then Jaylen Brown has taken, to me, a big leap. He's more confident. He gets in attack mode, and he has confidence in that jumper, and he's just great in transition with his athleticism.
Yeah, the two of them have been great, and sometimes you also have to remind yourself of their age. Like, Jaylen just turned 21, and Tatum is legitimately 19 years old. And Tatum in particular, like, Jaylen Brown, it feels like he's going to be a really good player for a long time. It feels like Jason Tatum's going to be a superstar. You know, like, you hate to put these labels on the guys after 15 games of his career, but he's just so poised. He can do things offensively with his length and his shooting that not a lot of players can do. You see him now attacking closeouts. And I've been impressed at like how quickly he's already adjusted. You saw the first few games of the season, he was passing up threes and he was missing them. He started like 1 for 9 this season, and Brad Stevens had to go to him and say, hey, when you're open for a three, we want you to take it. And you know, you have a great shot. They're going to go in. Don't pass them up and take these long contested twos. He's like, okay. And he started taking them, and now he's shooting 50% from three, just like Al Horford. So even these small adjustments this quickly, when you see a guy doing that at 19, you have to just wonder, like, this guy is just going to be the limit for him.
Yeah, he's certainly special, and both those guys have helped him on the boards as well. You look at the Celtics second in the NBA in rebounding, and in rebounding differential at 5.5, so that's been big for them as well. Adam, thanks so much for helping us break down this game. We know you'll be there at the Garden tonight. It should be a good one.
All right, Chris, enjoy the game too, man.
All right, that's Adam Himmelsbach. He is the Celtics beat reporter for the Boston Globe. You can find him on Twitter. His handle is at Adam Himmelsbach. When we come back, we're going to talk a little Patriots. They're out in Colorado preparing for Sunday's game against the Oakland Raiders. That game is in Mexico City, but it's not all work in Colorado. They're finding some time for some fun, too. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode of the podcast as soon as it's available. As promised, now we switch things over to the Patriots. They've won 5 games in a row. They're undefeated this season on the road, but all those road games, they've been in the United States. Now the Patriots go south of the border to Mexico to take on the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. It's not really a road game. It's more like a neutral site game. You won't have the Raiders home crowd there, but what you will have is extremely high altitude. more than 7,000 feet above sea level. To prepare for that, the Patriots are out in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And that's where we find Boston Globe Patriots beat reporter Nora Princiati. She's out there with the team covering practice and taking in some of the sights. How you doing, Nora?
Doing pretty well, Chris. What's up?
Nothing much. So what's it like out there in Colorado Springs? The Patriots training this week at the U.S. Air Force Academy.
It's gorgeous. It's so cool here. It's like a summer camp, but weirder, and the people are taller. but yeah, it's really cool. I mean, we're at about 6,700 feet, at least according to my Snapchat filter. So we're not quite at the same height as Estadio Azteca, where we will be in Mexico City. But you can feel it. You can feel that the air is thinner. And it's kind of funny to have the whole team on the road for a full week. There's a lot of logistics, but I think they think there's some bonding, too, that's going on. So it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about, sort of the bonding that can take place on trips like this. I know when I covered the team in 2008, they made a pair of back-to-back West Coast trips, and they had time in Santa Clara, California. Guys were sort of hunkered down at the hotel they were staying at there, but they also would sort of venture out and do things as a team. You know, guys would go into San Francisco and go to Alcatraz, or they would go to Fisherman's Wharf. So what have these guys been doing with some of their downtime now that they're all grouped together in sort of like a camp fashion, almost like a high school team on a road trip?
Yeah, so it's funny to kind of see the different life stages of the various members of the Patriots. Some of the younger offensive linemen, like Joe Tooney at one point said, oh, I'm just going to go get some pizza. You know, we're going to hang out. And then later in the evening, you see Tom Brady hopping into a white Aston Martin with Alex Guerrero and zipping off to wherever they were going. So a lot of people, you know, they used it in different ways. I think some guys just went to a cafe and hung out and took some downtime. I know Brandon Cooks went to the zoo. He really liked the giraffes. Some of the running backs went up to Pikes Peak, which is the tallest point in the southern half of the Rockies.
Was that just for fun, or was that sort of getting acclimated to the thin air that they're going to face in Estadio Azteca, where the elevation is more than 7,000 feet above sea level?
I think it's just for fun. You know, supposedly one of the things that's most beneficial in terms of the altitude is just sleeping at altitude. The Air Force Academy, where they're practicing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, that's at a particularly high point in Colorado Springs. So they'll have a chance to be, you know, sweating and breathing heavily at close to the same altitude, not quite as high as we'll be in Mexico City.
It seemed like Jacob Hollister had a situation with an Uber driver who was excited to have a Patriots player in her car.
Yeah, so I also had the same Uber driver at one point. I went to go get some coffee and do some work. And this woman was like, I was so excited. I'm just going to hang out by the hotel all the time. I'm going to pick up as many different shifts here as possible so that I get as many players as I can. And I was like, oh, who have you driven around? And first of all, props to this woman, because no offense to Jacob Hollister, but name recognition there is maybe not, you know, he's not Gronk. And she was like, oh, I had Jacob Hollister. I took him to a cafe. He was so nice. And she wanted his autograph. She told him he was a celebrity. And I just thought that was so funny.
They have that thing in People magazine, right, where it's, you know, celebrities are just like us. It's like, well, NFL players are just like, they have to take Ubers. It's not like these guys all have rental cars, unless you're Brady getting in the Aston Martin or whatever that is. But I think
sometimes I want to know what the deal is there.
So the Patriots have done these types of trips before. When they went to the United Kingdom, they've played there twice. On one of the trips, they decided they were going to go to see Parliament and Westminster Palace and Big Ben and all that stuff. And of course, famously, Brandon Merriweather was asked about what they did with some of the downtime.
To be honest, I think my favorite part besides the win would be going to see the Palace, you know, in the Big Bang Clock.
And that became sort of his nickname around here, was Big Bang Clock. So sometimes venturing out for these guys doesn't always work out in their favor if they're asked about what they did.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But it seems like this current group of Patriots perhaps had a greater grasp on their surroundings, on the environment, and what they were going to do. So that's good. But the Patriots have done these sort of bonding trips before, And hopefully it's something that will help them on the field. Nor obviously they've won five straight. The Raiders are certainly not an easy opponent. I know it's been a disappointing season for the Raiders. They haven't been the team that people thought. But when you look at Derek Carr, he's an upper echelon quarterback. They certainly have weapons in Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper. And the Patriots are still giving up some big plays. They've allowed 35 pass plays of 20 yards or more, which is the second most in the NFL, tied for the second most in the NFL with a couple other teams. When you look at the Patriots and you look at going into this game, what's the level of concern facing the Raiders in a foreign country and facing a team in the Raiders who really are a foreign opponent? The Patriots don't see a lot of the Raiders, haven't played them since 2014. Jack Del Rio wasn't even their coach back then.
Right. So I think you really hit on it with the concern about the big plays, because that's been the biggest issue for the Patriots defense when they haven't been playing well. Of course, they have been playing much better lately. The thing about the Raiders is that's what they want to do. They want to have this explosive offense. They want to push the ball down the field, but it does sort of seem like they can't, or they do it in fits and starts. You know, they're tied for 13th in passes of 20 or more yards. And if they can put that together, then the Patriots have some concern, because those are the types of plays that they've gotten, you know, turned around on. You know, Stephon Gilmore played pretty well against the Broncos, but Malcolm Butler struggled a little bit. So I would say that that and the run defense would be the main concerns. You know, I wouldn't say so much that being in Mexico City, the playing on the road, I mean, you know, the Patriots have a fantastic record on the road, just sort of the well-oiled machine that the Patriots are and have been, these trips where all the planning and all the coordination, all the organization and all the discipline really factors in. I think sometimes they think that that's a little bit of an edge for them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. They've won 12 consecutive road games. Last year, they were undefeated on the road. They've been great this year on the road. They haven't lost a game on the road this year on their way to a 7-2 record. And even though this is really a neutral site game, they are counting it as a road game because it's the Raiders that gave up their home game to have this game played in Mexico City. So it should be very interesting. Certainly not a normal week, Nora, in terms of the Patriots preparing for an opponent and also the opponent and where the game's going to be played. So really some interesting stuff. Sometimes pro football can be sort of monotonous, and Bill Belichick is certainly a creature of routine, but this is a very different week for the Patriots, and I think it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. It's funny to, you know, they've got curfew at 10 or 11 at night, and the glamorous lives of NFL assistant coaches, you know, you don't think about it involving making sure that Alan Branch is wearing his jammies.
That's a great way of putting it. All right. Thanks, Nora. We appreciate you joining us. That's Nora Princiati, Boston Globe Patriots beat writer. You can find her on Twitter. She's at Nora Princiati. Nora, thanks again.
Thanks, Chris. See ya.
Finally, the cheap seats. What's in a name? Well, if you're Marist College, there's an acknowledgement that gun violence in this country needs to be addressed. At a time when national politicians appear unwilling to make policy changes to combat gun violence in the United States, Marist is making a small, symbolic gesture to point out that mass shootings and the glorification of gun culture aren't acceptable. Amid a rash of mass shootings, Marist has decided to rename its mascot. The Red Fox's mascot was formerly known as Shooter. Now the mascot is named Frankie. Overly PC? Perhaps. No one was connecting Shooter the Fox with gun violence, and there's nothing about the appearance of the mascot that alludes to firearms. But the change was contemplated and then initiated after a gunman killed 58 and wounded more than 500 at an outdoor concert in Las Vegas in October. It comes in a year that has seen more than 200 fatalities caused by mass shootings, according to USA Today data. The new name was chosen for the school's mascot because of its proximity to Hyde Park, New York. That's the birthplace of former President Franklin D. Roosevelt, hence Frankie. Frankie debuted last week. Marist Athletic Director Tim Murray told the Poughkeepsie Journal, "Our mascot is supposed to be fun, exciting, and so on. If our mascot creates any issues with any person, it's not worth having the nickname." He wished teams like the Washington Redskins understood that. Look, Shooter probably didn't need to have his name changed, but the sentiment behind the name change, to not let us go unaffected and unchanged after mass shootings, is something we should all cheer. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket. Be sure to tell a friend about us and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like us, please leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.